Now we are going to talk about California's Proposition 22, which allows Uber, Lyft, DoorDash, and other app-based companies to classify workers as independent contractors so they don't have to provide them with basic benefits. Prop 22 passed on last year's ballot with 58% of the vote, and it went into effect on January 1st. Prop 22 was the costliest ballot measure in California's history. Gig companies spent more than $220 million promoting it. Shortly after Prop 22 took effect, full-time union delivery drivers for Albertsons were fired and replaced with drivers who work for companies like DoorDash. On August 20th, in an unexpected win for gig workers, Alameda County Superior Court Judge Frank Roche ruled that Prop 22 is unconstitutional and unenforceable. He wrote that Prop 22 limits the power of a future legislature to define app-based drivers as workers subject to workers' compensation law. He also wrote that Prop 22 claims to protect Californians who choose to work as independent contractors, but it also obliquely and indirectly prevents them from bargaining collectively. The LA Times reports that since a ballot initiative cannot be amended after it is passed, any unconstitutional provision renders it unenforceable. So joining us to talk about what this all means are two guests. Caitlin Vega is a labor lawyer who co-founded Union Made. She joined formed that group to help unions develop effective strategies to win. Caitlin Vega has worked with the California Labor Federation for more than 15 years. Hi, Caitlin. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Erica Maghetto is an organizer with Rideshare Drivers United, an organization of Uber and Lyft drivers uniting for a fair, dignified, and sustainable ride-hailing industry. Erica has been a Lyft and Uber driver since 2017. She started organizing in 2019. She and her partner were the first to request PPE donations when the pandemic hit, and they've assembled and distributed thousands of care packages to gig workers. Hi, Erica. Erica, thank you so much for joining us.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Great to have you. Caitlin, let's start off with you. Can you first give us some background on how Prop 22 ended up in court? In January, the Service Employees International Union, along with three drivers and one passenger, filed a lawsuit stating that Prop 22 violated California's state constitution. Can you tell us more about it?
Yes, absolutely. I would start even further back and just say that it was drivers like Erica, who has played a heroic role in this struggle, who fought so hard to pass AB 5, which would grant equal rights to gig workers, so-called gig workers, to those given to every other kind of worker in doing every other type of job and doing, in fact, the same types of jobs, but as employees. So AB 5 said all workers are equal. They all get minimum wage. They all get UI. They all get PPE. They all get workers' compensation. The gig companies didn't like that outcome. So they spent $220 million and probably a little bit more than that. Most expensive ballot campaign in American history to deceive voters into passing Prop 22. At the time, I think we all looked at that initiative, which had a 7/8 threshold for the legislature to make any changes, which was unprecedented. And we all felt that it seemed so undemocratic and so unfair. But really, I have to give credit to, of course, the courageous drivers and the brilliant legal minds who decided to bring this case forward and to challenge it on the basis of, you know, the fact that the state constitution ensures that workers have access to workers' compensation and gives the legislature plenary power over which workers should be covered by workers' compensation. So the fact that this ballot measure was such a power grab, I think, ended up backfiring on them, with the court concluding that it was unconstitutional.
Erica, you have been a driver since 2017, and you recently told Vox that when you first started driving for Lyft, you made $40 an hour plus bonuses. But as time went on, your bonuses were lowered and you were driving very long distances just to get by. Can you first tell us how Prop 22 changed things for you and other drivers?
I'm happy to, yes. You know, when Prop 22 came into effect as of January 1st, 2020, shortly before the pandemic, we saw reductions in pay. We saw we were stripped of the ability to see where the rides were going and how much we stood to make before accepting a ride. That was a feature that was added to the app to convince voters and drivers that they were, in fact, independent contractors. So the minute Prop 22 passed, those features were taken away. A couple of months later, when you know the pandemic hit, we're sitting around for hours, and the proposition states, you know, that we'll only be paid for engaged time. So that means that any time that we're waiting between rides, we're not being paid. Any time that we're washing our cars or changing the oil, none of that stuff gets paid. When the pandemic hit, there were no rides to be had. So I was sitting waiting for hours on end. And shortly after the pandemic hit, I'd say it was the middle of March, I was reduced to $8 an hour. And so it was very devastating for me and also for a lot of drivers.
$8 an hour. I mean, I read that you left the corporate world because you just didn't like what you were doing anymore. And so you started driving and you were able to make a decent living and then everything changed. And so it's kind of incredible to think that Prop 22 went into effect under COVID. So this all happened at the same time.
It's exactly. It was a catastrophic snowball effect of exploitation that happened to workers. And yes, ironically, a lot of my role at working in corporate property management became evicting people from their homes. And shortly before that, we were gentrified out of our property. Our entire building was given $4,000 in a 60-day notice and told to leave. So when that happened, and that's also happening to a lot of drivers that we represent in the Bay Area, that, you know, their housing prices are skyrocketing and they're not able to generate the income that they need to sustain a life for themselves. So we've been traveling and camping and living in our cars for nearly 2 years now. And every month when I go to talk to drivers, you see more and more of those. It's very obvious that many drivers are in the same situation, unfortunately.
You're camping and living in your car because you can't make ends meet driving for Uber and Lyft?
We are, and we're finding, I'm actually sitting at the Amazon warehouse here in Portland. My partner is applying for a job. It's sad to say that Amazon is the lesser of two evils in this case, because we don't have to front the cost for the billionaire companies like we do in our cars when we're paying for gas and we're paying for all of the maintenance and paying for PPE, most of us. So at least here, we have a hope that we can go back to a more normal life. But we're hanging on a thread and we're living on a prayer.
Mm. Erica, before we go to break, do you meet on a regular basis other drivers who have lost housing and might be we've heard stories of people sleeping in cars, but have people lost their housing because they cannot make ends meet driving for Uber and Lyft?
Yes. Every time we go out to the lots to talk to drivers, we talk to probably 100 drivers a day, and we at least find one or two where you can see all of their belongings now are on the floor in the front seat because they're not allowed to have passengers in that space. So that's become their storage space. I met a driver 3 years ago that was his situation. It's an inevitable truth. The longer that you're driving, you know, you're driving your car into the ground and you're not able to sustain your life. So yes, we meet them all the time. It's sad to see, but it's a reality, definitely a reality.
That is Erica Maghetto, an organizer with Rideshare Drivers United. Erica has been a Lyft and Uber driver since 2017. She was making $40 an hour plus bonuses. Now she can barely make ends meet. And as you heard, she is living in her car. And I was just curious about Uber's latest results, and I found their news release from August 4th, 2020. Gross bookings reached an all-time high of $21.9 billion, up 114% year over year. We'll talk more about this over a break, after the break. So bookings are reaching an all-time high, and drivers are living now in their cars, not just sleeping in their cars. Caitlin Vega is a labor lawyer who co-founded Union Made to help unions develop effective strategies to win. Caitlin worked with the California Labor Federation for more than 15 years. And today we are talking about what it means now that a judge has ruled that California's Prop 22 is unconstitutional and unenforceable. We're talking about what this means with Caitlin Vega, a labor lawyer who co-founded Union Made to help unions develop effective strategies to win. Erica Maghetto is an organizer with Rideshare Drivers United, an organization of Uber and Lyft drivers. Erica has been a Lyft and Uber driver since 2017. Because she no longer is able to make ends meet, she is now sleeping in her car. She's talking to 100 drivers a day, and she finds one or two a day who are also sleeping in their cars. Erica, what was your response when you heard that a judge ruled that Prop 22 is unconstitutional?
We were totally elated. We were pleased and thankful to SEIU for backing the suit. And we're very excited to see that Judge Rocha saw through the lies that were Prop 22. It was an extremely deceptive measure. It was very clear to drivers that they were exploiting, people of color to do those commercials, that they were inundating voters with propaganda that was absolutely false about what drivers wanted. And we were so pleased that we now feel that we have a second chance at creating a workplace that is fair and equitable for all.
We just got an email from an organizer who says that following the ruling that Prop 22 is unconstitutional, DoorDash workers affiliated with groups like We Drive Progress and Gig Workers Rising will lead a caravan to the house of the DoorDash CEO, Tony Hsu, in the Pacific Heights neighborhood of San Francisco. DoorDash workers are demanding that DoorDash give workers transparency for tips, earnings, and 120% of minimum wage, establishing a due process system with no more unfair deactivations. And according to, it looks like Forbes here, Tony Hsu, the CEO of DoorDash, is now worth $2.8 billion. I mean, Caitlin, that's what's incredible about all of this. These app companies, while some of them are not making money, the executives are multimillionaires and sometimes billionaires, and yet the workers who make these companies tick are really struggling just to make ends meet.
Yeah, I think listening to Erica's story, it's so clear to me how the debate around these issues has been so far removed from the reality of drivers' lives. And so you have, company lobbyists and, of course, all of their paid commercials talking about workers wanting freedom and independence and flexibility, and that's what they're getting with Prop 22. And I think, the real story that we have always heard from drivers is that, of course, people who drive for Uber and drive for DoorDash are just like every other worker. They have bills to pay. They want economic security. And they don't want to be treated like second-class citizens or in a subcategory of employment where they actually have very little independence, and yet they have no safety net through their job like other workers have. And so in many ways, Prop 22 created the worst of both worlds, where drivers are still controlled by the company, Company sets the rates, company determines the rules for passengers, and yet they have nothing to fall back on. They're not even paid for the time that they are, you know, benefiting the company by driving around, making it a faster response rate for upkeep to their cars, all of which they would be paid for if they were working for a company that hired them as employees. And I think the point you make about the profits here really goes to what's at stake more broadly, because misclassification of workers as independent contractors is incredibly profitable. Mm-hmm. If you don't have to pay workers in the kind of between times, like between rides, imagine what that would do for restaurants if they didn't have to pay kitchen staff or waiters when there wasn't a customer, or once a customer already had their food. I mean, in every workplace, they could figure out ways to dramatically reduce pay, let alone, you know, not pay into UI and not provide workers' comp. And our fear is that really Prop 22 was meant to be the tip of the iceberg. In fact, once it was passed, the companies basically announced this is going to be a new model of work that we're going to expand throughout the country and into other industries. And so, you know, when we look at this fight, I truly believe this is a fight about, you know, not just present conditions, but the future of work in every industry. An app can be developed to dispatch workers to do any job. And, you know, the bottom line is it doesn't matter how you're dispatched to a job. Workers are workers. We all have basic needs. We all have people to take care of. We all want to be able to go to sleep at night without worrying about whether we can afford shelter or food. And I just have to say again, like it is incredibly inspiring to me, the work that Erica and so many drivers have done in the midst of those conditions, still being out there, being leaders in this fight, supporting one another, and really fighting to make change. And so I hope it's very clear that this victory belongs to the drivers, and hopefully will help us find a path forward where we're able to win equal rights.
To your point, Prop 22 also allows these companies not to pay the state workers' into the state workers' compensation program. And I just want to highlight one case. Suhana Hussein of the Los Angeles Times had a devastating piece back in November. This Uber driver died of COVID. Prop 22 will sway his family's fate. Khalid Zayed worked as much as 80 hours a week for Uber to provide for his family. When COVID hit, his family wanted him to stay home, but the bills kept coming in, and so he continued working. Unfortunately, some of his passengers refused to wear a mask. He sadly got COVID, and he died. And Susanna Hussein for the LA Times reports, though the state-administered workers' comp program created to provide wage replacement and medical benefits to workers who suffered job-related injuries or illnesses, the family could have been eligible for at least $320,000 in death benefits. Given that his wife and two children were still teenagers and they'd been dependent on Zayed's earnings, the lawyer said the family might even be eligible for additional hundreds of thousands of dollars over the next couple of years. But because of Prop 22, the family received nothing. I mean, Erica, this is just devastating, and it's just one story.
It's so sad, and unfortunately, we hear these stories all the time. And I mean, oh, it's just so jarring. I don't even have words. How many families are affected by the travesty of the fact that they're not eligible for workman's compensation? It rolls back all of those protections that we put into place over decades of progress, right? It's taking away all of those things that were meant to be safety nets. And not only are we stripped of our workmen's compensation, but as Caitlin mentioned, there's no minimum wage. There's no sick pay. We really need sick pay in these times. You know, if I got COVID right now and I was out of work for a week, I don't know what I would do. We probably wouldn't eat. It's really sad, and it's really, you know, disgusting that these companies and these executives, like you mentioned, Tony Hsu, are buying 4, 5, and 6 multi-million dollar homes and yet refuse to provide their workers with a decent living wage.
We should also point out that while some companies did give their workers an extra $5 per hour, for example, for hazard pay, KQED writes that even if California lawmakers wanted to extend these benefits to gig workers, they would face an insurmountable legal hurdle because of Prop 22. Can you talk about that, Caitlin?
Yes. I mean, this is part of what made that proposition so shocking. The first piece of it is that it redefined what makes these workers a contractor. So normally there's a standard that has to be met. There was a standard before AB5, and then there was a better standard in AB5. The companies didn't want either of those. They designed their own that was, of course, meant to just make all of their workers into independent contractors. And that wasn't even enough for them. They had to add the language that the legislature could not do anything to address the wages or working conditions of app-based drivers without meeting a 7/8 vote threshold, which is pretty much, not only is that unprecedented as a standard and an initiative, it never happens in real life. It is not possible to get an increase in worker wages or an improvement in worker benefits on a 7/8 vote. And so they essentially locked in this group of workers, the vast majority of whom are people of color and women, locked them into second class status forever. I mean, that's the practical implications. And I think that's why this ruling, it was such, you know, I was elated also in hearing about it. I think it's so profoundly undemocratic and such a demonstration of like corporate power, you know, being able to triumph over democratic values. There was a process in the legislature where legislators heard from drivers what their lives were like and how badly they needed these protections. And the companies literally bought themselves an exemption and then put in this 7/8 threshold, making it, you know, impossible to ever improve upon. And so it really is a huge and significant victory. I just have to say, like, these stories of drivers dying on the job and their families not getting workers' comp, I think is one of the most profound injustices and really heartbreaking aspects of this kind of misclassification. And this is why it was so important in the fight here in California to say every worker deserves those things. These are very dangerous jobs. These are jobs where you're having to be out alone with members of the public, whether they're in your car or you're, you know, delivering to their doorstep. They're very dangerous jobs. Plus driving alone is, you know, all jobs that involve driving are more high risk due to accidents. And so you're taking a group of people, putting them in these very dangerous situations. And, you know, if you ever talk to workers on this subject, they're never focused on getting benefits for themselves if they get injured. They are completely focused on the idea that if they're ever not able to come home from work, they want their family taken care of. And that's precisely what Prop 22 made sure could never happen for app-based drivers. And so it is a supreme victory to have the court look specifically at that workers' comp provision and say that that's what invalidates the entire initiative.
Well, today we're talking about Prop 22 and what it means now that a judge has ruled that it is unconstitutional. Caitlin Vega is a labor lawyer who worked with the California Labor Federation for more than 15 years. Erica Maghetto is an organizer with Rideshare Drivers United. Erica has been a Lyft and Uber driver, and because she can no longer make ends meet, she is living in her car. She talks to 100 drivers a day, and she finds one or two who are also living in their cars. Let's hear from Rondu in San Francisco, who is involved in the DoorDash action that is going to be happening tomorrow at 11:15 a.m. in San Francisco in front of DoorDash CEO Tony Hsu's house. Hi, Rondu. Thank you for calling in.
Good morning.
Good morning. So can you tell us about tomorrow? Oh, first off, tell us, Rondu, are you working for DoorDash?
Yes.
Can you tell us what you do and just what your overall work experience has been like?
I mean, sort of like rideshare, where you deliver people. Instead, for DoorDash, you deliver food. And basically, my experience is sitting around waiting for food and extremely underpaid orders, right? Because you get to see how much you make up front. Like, I'd say like 80%+ of the orders are non-tip or like extremely underpaid. And so what you do is you spend 80% of the time waiting around for one decent paying order. And it's just kind of, it's a big waste of time. You know, like, you have to have a lot of time, extra time, to wait for one order that can pay you a decent amount to cobble together something like a minimum wage.
80% of the orders do not tip?
Yes. I would say about 80% of them, they're not tipped. Or if they are tipped, who knows how little it is. But you just know, like, the numbers are extremely low. Like, you know, under $5 to do a delivery.
So
$3 sometimes.
You're basically relying on tips?
Yes. Almost entirely.
So what would you make? Can you just give us an average work day in terms of hours? And what are you making on an average day if you're not getting many
on
tips?
An average day?
Yeah.
I mean, possibly, if I only take orders that are tips, right, and don't just, like, run my car into the ground or work for, like, slave wages, then I'm going to make, like, on a normal day, maybe, like, $90. You know, if I keep my app on throughout the day, do some at lunchtime, do some into the nighttime, you know, over like a 10-hour span, I might
make $90
or something.
Yeah, $90 for like 10 90. Hours.
Yeah. And the thing about it is, like, they're totally doing it. You know, they're charging customers whatever they're charging. I'm sure you've all ordered on DoorDash at some point in your life. And, you know, it's not cheap, but at the same time, there's no transparency in terms of how much they're paying the driver. Mm-hmm. So a customer gets all these charges. They think the driver's going to make money, or at least in their mind, they like to close their eyes and squint real hard and pretend that the driver's actually getting paid. But in reality, the driver's is making hardly any of that money, and they're entirely relying on tips.
Can you tell us just briefly, we're almost out of time, tell us briefly about tomorrow's action at 11:15.
Tomorrow we're going to go to the CEO's house, I think, Tony, whatever his name is, and basically we're going to go out there and raise our voices, because we know that the, you know, income inequality in this country is at an extreme, you know, like since the Gilded Age, this is like the worst time, and we're going to go out there and make a fuss, and we're going to speak up, and we're going to be heard, we're going to make some noise. Get some eyeballs on us and let people know that we're not going to take this kind of economic abuse, economic exploitation lying down. You know, they can pass the laws they want, but in the end, good will prevail and evil will fail. I mean, it's just ridiculous. You know, you guys talked about Prop 22. To me, it was like a joke. It's like, is this serious? There's no way. Mm. And they got their little victory for like 2 minutes. You know, a hot minute, and now, you know, it's unconstitutional. So we're just going to add some more wood to the fire, put the pressure on these companies to stop living like a bunch of renegades, you know, above the law, okay, in terms of labor laws, and skirting all the laws because they're new technology.
Well,
and we're going to go out there, we're going to make some noise.
Rondu, we're almost out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. We're going to get your number. We'd love to have you back on the show. That is Rondu, who is a driver for DoorDash. They're going to be protesting in front of DoorDash CEO Tony Hsu's home tomorrow at 11:15 in San Francisco. We're almost out of time. Caitlin, what does it mean now that Prop 22 is unconstitutional? The LA Times writes that this could go to the California Supreme Court and possibly take more than a year.
Yes, we do expect that we will see the companies appeal likely to the state Supreme Court. I would say that, you know, the California State Supreme Court issued a unanimous ruling in the case called Dynamex, where they adopted the ABC test. They said that was the proper test for worker misclassification, which basically launched this entire thing. That was the standard that was codified in Dynamex. Basically, in that case, the California Supreme Court looked out at the economy and they said, we have an economy based on exploitation. We have companies that are not taking responsibility for the workers who are doing the work. And we need to change that. And so they adopted a stronger test to protect workers that was later codified in AB 5 that the companies exempted themselves from in Prop 22. So we have a lot of faith that the California Supreme Court, which issued that decision unanimously, you know, sees these issues very clearly, is not fooled by all the rhetoric that we hear from these companies, but really understands the impact that the employment model provides this level of security for workers and what happens when workers don't have that and fall through the cracks. So I think it is likely that it will go that route, but I think that we're confident that the workers will prevail.
Caitlin Vega is a longtime labor lawyer who co-founded Union Made. Caitlin worked with the California Labor Federation for more than 15 years. Thank you for joining us, Caitlin.
Thank you so much for having me.
Erica Maghetto is an organizer with Rideshare Drivers United and drives for Lyft and Uber. Because she no longer can make ends meet, she is sleeping in her car. Erica, thank you so much for joining us. And we'd love to have you back. And really, best of luck to you and your partner. I'm really hoping you can find housing soon.
Thank you. We hope so, too. And we want to send solidarity to Ron Du and let him know that Rideshare Drivers United will be there tomorrow. And we support the event. And we're looking forward to it.
All right. Thank you so much. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.